magical destination.
It's really simple.
Easy to use.
And all at your fingertips.
With the new Radio Player, you can listen online to all the BBC Radio you love. Go to the BBC Radio 3 website and click on Listen.
And you're listening to BBC Radio 3, broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's just after 25 to 12. Time now for Jazz Lineup, presented by Julian Joseph.
Hello. Rolling Stones drummer Charlie Watts speaks to me about his upcoming gigs at Soho's Pizza Express in London. Our Now's the Time slot with journalist Kevin Legendre pays tribute to vocalist and poet Gil Scott-Heron, who passed away recently. Kevin Legendre is here with me. What can we expect, Kevin?
Thought-provoking music and lyrics from one of the great thinkers, as well as poets and songwriters. And it's a record that's really slipped through the cracks. It has some brilliant tracks on it, some of which you may know, some of which you won't. But there are things like this.
Well, stay tuned to hear more from that album. Also on the show, contrasting sounds of Paul Harrison's new organ trio with the simplicity of Ian Shaw's piano and voice contribution at the launch of the Glasgow Jazz Festival in May. To start, the sound of bass clarinet in the hands of Courtney Pine. He features this instrument exclusively on his latest album, Europa. This is Darwin's Dream Deferred.
Thank you.
Courtney Pine in fine form with Darwin's Dream Deferred from his critically acclaimed Europa album, where he features the bass clarinet and focuses his compositional drive on the folk traditions across Europe with an Afrocentric perspective. The album features his now regular pianist Zoe Rahman. Dominic Grant is on guitar, Alec Dankworth was on bass on that track, and the superb Mark Mondesi was playing drums. If you want to catch Courtney, Zoe and the guys in concert, they're at the Botanical Gardens in Sheffield on Friday the 1st. On the 2nd, they're at the Gala Theatre in Durham. And on Sunday the 3rd of July, they're at the Glasgow Jazz Festival. And we'll be hearing more about the Glasgow Jazz Festival later on in the show, with contrasting concert sets from organ trio Breach and vocalist Ian Shaw. Now, the Scandinavian scene has its own personality when it comes to jazz, and someone pushing his own boundaries with verve, fire and imagination is the 25-year-old Norwegian-born saxophonist Marius Nesset. When he travelled to Denmark to study at the Rhythmic Music Conservatory in Copenhagen, he encountered our very own keyboard wizard and composer Django Bates teaching there, and his influence is apparent. Now very much his own man, Bates joins Nesset on keyboards with Phrenesis star bassist Jasper Højby and drummer Anton Eiger. This is Golden Explosion. Thank you. the intense tenor saxophone sound and music of Marius Nesset and the title track of his action-packed album on the Edition label, Golden Explosion. Django Bates was on keyboards, Jasper Hoiby on bass, and Anton Eiger was on the drums. Marius cites Stravinsky, Zappa, Shorter, and Bates as influences, and you can also hear the profound Steve Coleman M-bass influence in there too. The album is well-conceived, and the set is definitely a talent to watch. It's Jazz Festival time in Glasgow from the 29th of June to the 3rd of July. And Jazz Lineup were at the launch in May to celebrate that fact and to bring you two concerts as a taster to what you can expect to see. First is a group conjured from the imagination of Paul Harrison, who focuses his playing around the organ sounds of his electronic keyboard. The band is a trio, but not the standard format. The guitar of Graham Stephen and the drums from Canadian-born Chris Wallace complete the lineup, and they are collectively known as Breach. Jazz Lineup caught up with Paul Harrison to talk about Breach and started by asking whether he was the main composer.
No, that's divided up completely equally between the three of us, the writing. I've been a big fan of Graham's writing for a long time, and Chris wrote a lot of stuff for his album with his band, which is called Loose Grip. And of course they have a band together, Newt. So, yeah, I'm in with the right guys, finally.
Next was how long Breach has been established as a band.
It's just starting, yeah. I think the first time we played together was in a Glasgow pub roughly a year ago. So we've been writing and meeting at least two or three times a month and just developed the music.
Bands work the pub scene in Glasgow. What's their take on the band?
We haven't done an awful lot of live playing recently, but it's always been positive. I mean, a trio is a perfect format, obviously, for taking in a pub. And people respond to the organ thing. Guitar is a kind of instrument that is popular. And certainly not, you know, in the hands of someone like Graham. It's got all kinds of things going on there in the brew, you know, rock, folk, as well as all his jazz stuff that he's got down.
Paul Harrison speaking about his new trio Breach and their album On the Walk is out now. So, to the highlights of the first of tonight's concerts recorded at the launch of the Glasgow Jazz Festival at BBC Scotland's Pacific Quay building, Jazz Trio Breach. Their set begins with the title track of the album composed by Canadian drummer Chris Wallace, and this is On the Walk. Thank you. Breach and Theories Part 2, which was composed by Paul Harrison, who was on keyboards. Chris Wallace was on the drums. And there's more concert music from the launch of the Glasgow Jazz Festival from vocalist, pianist Ian Shaw, coming up later on the show. More jazz as the summer unfolds with the Blaze Festival 2011 at the Barbican. There's a second visit from Grammy Award-winning bassist and vocalist Esperanza Spalding. Trumpeter Randy Brecker and ex-Miles Davis tenor man Bill Evans join forces with Modesky Martin and Wood. And vocalist extraordinaire Diane Reeves all perform. Blaze includes commissions and new works, open-air concerts and special shows in venues across the east of London, including the Hackney Empire and more. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on DAB Digital Radio. Drummer Charlie Watts made his name in the seminal rock and roll band The Rolling Stones. You may have heard of them. But before that, he was playing jazz and his affection for this music has never waned. I had the great honour of speaking with Charlie when he came into Broadcasting House a few days ago to speak with me about his upcoming London shows at the Pizza Express in Dean Street. And he was also joined by pianist Ben Waters, and they spoke of their project called the A, B, C and D of Boogie Woogie. The A referring to Axel in Axel Zwingenberger, B also was Ben Waters, C Charlie Watts and D Dave Green. The A, B, C and D of Boogie Woogie.
I love doing this because it's just a straight-ahead swing, really,
yeah.
With a very weird lineup, which is two grand pianos.
That must be strange, yeah.
Well, it's great. It's the old Albert Ammons, Pete Johnson thing. I always imagine we were at Cafe Society. That's what it's about. And if you had a big enough room, you could dance. It's that yeah. sort of music. So it's for me, it's wonderful. It's like a train going.
Absolutely.
You just go along with it. And, of course, you have Dave, who takes over a lot of the thing. If I was more of a player, I could do solos and that, but he does that, so yeah. It breaks up the sound a bit, because it's quite hard to do a trio for 2 hours, you know.
Yeah it's demanding. It's very
it's very demanding, unless you're Bill Evans and that crowd, you know. But you know yourself, it is quite to make a show, I mean, of it.
Sure.
So we sort of break it up a bit.
What kind of venues are you playing, because you said you've done 40 gigs so far with this project?
We get offered a lot all the time, but because of Dave's very busy playing, mm-hmm. Axel's very busy, Charlie's very busy.
Yeah.
I'm not so busy, but the
no, he's always busy. I'm not busy.
But the thing
I
is,
just won't work.
We get offered all sorts of things, and but also it's what everyone's come to like. It seems to be naturally sort of 500 people or smaller we like to play to. If it gets bigger than that, it becomes a bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's because, like you say, it feels like we're meant to be playing at Cafe Society. But if you start going into 3,000-seater places and stuff, it just gets lost, I think. And
the dynamic changes.
Yeah, the dynamic changes. Yeah, and it just doesn't work. And like, I think the best gigs we have for me are these smaller gigs where nothing's mic'd up.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
You know, just when you've just got like you know, a 300-seater theatre and you've got the pianos, the drums aren't mic'd. Bass would be through an amp, but that's about it, really. You know, and. Yeah. That seems to work fantastically.
Yeah, it's true.
What do you think is so special about the Pizza Express?
It seems a nice room, actually. It's a bit like Ronnie's, which is a lovely room, I think.
When you go and hear a gig, say, in a club, do you always feel like you want to taste, like you want to go up and play as well? I always do.
Yeah, but I never feel confident enough to get up there.
No,
I'd hate sitting in. I'm not a sitter in a.
Wow.
Some guys are fantastic at it, you know, and here he is, you know, but I'm not very good at that. I get terribly anxious about playing in front of two people or 20,000. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to play in front of many.
Yeah.
But I'm always anxious about it. And
yeah.
I think if I wasn't, you wouldn't bother with it, really.
Right.
And I like to play with people before you do that.
Well, why do you think jazz has such an affectionate place in your heart?
When I was young, I discovered it. Mm-hmm. And with David, we discovered the history of it,
mm-hmm.
i.e. from Johnny Dodds to, in those days, Monk.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always loved people that improvise. I mean, I love Kenny Wheeler, you know, improvisers, really.
Sure.
I've always loved the swing of jazz,
right.
Which is kind of a bit hidden now with the technicalities of it. But
yeah.
I even love the technicalities of it.
Right.
Because thanks to people like Boy Haynes, I can see, and Tony Williams, mm-hmm. how they, that came about where we are now. Mm-hmm. ICAT, that's how I see it. But my roots are really a bit more Kenny Clarke, and even before that, the Sid Catlett sort of thing. When I'm with the Stones, I always imagine I'm Earl Palmer or someone.
Right, yeah.
When I'm with this lot, I'm Sid Catlett.
Ah, that's
if funny. Only. But, you know, it's what you imagine. Yeah. But then I learned to play like that. When I was 15 or so, I used to go and see the local dance band for the drummer. Mm. And then when I was about 16, I saw Phil Seaman.
Right.
And Tony Kinsey, and I wanted to be Tony. And, I've always wanted to be that, you know.
And, hey, look what happened.
It's their fault then.
So, in a nutshell, what is the A, B, C, and D of Boogie Woogie?
Axel, Ben, Charlie, and Dave.
And Charlie Watts will be at the Pizza Express in Soho, London on Friday the 24th and Saturday the 25th of June. Charlie will be playing with two fine exponents of the Boogie Woogie piano style for a project they call the ABC of Boogie Woogie. The pianists are Axel Zwegenberger and Ben Waters. Charlie Watts will be on drums and Dave Green on the bass. When I attended the Berklee College of Music in the late 80s, there were quite a few tenor saxophonists, some of whom stood out. And amongst those, there were some really good players who even shone more brightly, like Tommy Smith, Mark Turner, Chris Cheek, and Donny McCaslin. All have gone on to distinguish themselves, and Donny has done so in the company of people like vibraphone master Mike Manieri, pianist Danilo Perez, composer Maria Schneider, and recently as part of trumpeter Dave Douglas's outfit. He also makes an appearance on the latest Bobby McFerrin release called Vocabularies. Perpetual Motion is McCaslin's latest musical venture, and he takes a slight departure from his usual acoustic sound to a more rock, fusion, and electronic-influenced one, packed full of improvisational urgency. This is LZCM. We'll be right back. US Tenor Man Donnie McCaslin and LZCM from his Perpetual Motion recording, with Adam Benjamin on the Rhodes, Tim Lefebvre on the electric bass, and Mark Giuliana on drums, who some of you may recognize from the Phrenesis Alive album. Perpetual Motion is out now on the Greenleaf Music label. Now to our monthly feature, Now's the Time, with journalist and fellow music fan Kevin Legendre. Welcome, Kevin.
Hiya, Julian.
So what have we got this time?
With Gil Scott-Heron passing recently, I thought it was necessary to pay tribute to him, and I've chosen a record which I think has slipped through the cracks of recognition. This is Reflections, and I think it's been overshadowed by some of those amazing records that he recorded in the 70s. And reading the obituaries that appeared in the papers recently, there was a lot of attention played to the likes of The Revolution Will Not Be Televised and Pieces of a Man and It's Your World. Rightly so, because that period of his discography, when he was with Flying Dutchman and Arista, was really incredible. Mm-hmm. But this album is very, very personal to me because it was the first Gil Scott record that I heard as a teenager.
Right.
And as you'll hear, it really got me thinking about jazz as well, which is why I think we should open with this track, which is called Is That Jazz?
Bass, it was never really commonplace. It was always measures ahead. on. Brother Ron, kiss it on. The bass line so strong. The sound seemed to glow in the dark. I take pride in what's mine. Is that really a crime when you know I ain't got nothing else? Only millions of sounds. Me up when I'm down. Let me salvage a piece of myself. What it has will surely last. But isn't that jazz? What it has will surely last. But isn't that jazz? What it has will surely last. Isn't that jazz? What it has will surely last. But isn't that
Gil Scott-Heron and Is That Jazz from his 1982 release Reflections. Kevin, I mean, he's questioning the status quo. That's one of the great things about Gil Scott-Heron.
He's challenging the critical establishment. Mm. I think that's why this track really resonated with me. Mm. When you get to the bridge and he says, we overanalyze and we let others define. That's a really, really strong political statement. If you think about the struggles that many jazz musicians have had to be accepted, and how this constant battle with critics and defining the music, what is jazz, what is this music, which is so fundamental to the African-American spirit. And its difficult nature is what makes it so brilliant, it's so mesmeric, and coming up with terms and having critics saying this is and this isn't, he's putting his finger right on that, which I think is really important.
And I think it's often being decided from a culture outside of jazz.
There you go.
You know, it's actually the popular culture of the time then dictates what the perspective on jazz per se is.
I think in this particular piece as well, because you have to imagine me listening to this as a teenager,
yeah,
when at the time, I suppose most of the music that I was exposed to was mainstream soul and funk, mm-hmm. and I was listening to a lot of backbeat-driven music, mm-hmm. and I remember hearing this and thinking, wow, what's he doing with that bass? This walking bass line, the stuff that he's doing on the ride cymbal, that just the approach to the rhythm, for me as a young boy growing up, was very, very eye-opening. I'd never really heard music like that before. I was just getting into jazz, I suppose, and this was one of the things which was a stepping stone for me. The fact that there was a saxophone, that there's a certain amount of improvisation, and that he was name-checking Basie, Ellington, Ron Carter, yeah. when he talks about Ron Carter's bass line so strong that glow in the dark. But the line that really, really gets me is that Ellington was more than number one for the things that he said. So he's talking about jazz musicians as political figures as well, mm. people who are prepared to step up to the plate and make points. And all of that, it really, really had a huge impact on me as a young kid.
Well, put into perspective where Gil Scott-Heron sort of sat at the time that Reflections came out in terms of the musical landscape, because you alluded to the earlier periods, the Flying Dutchman period, which was from 1970 to 74, then Arista he was with from 75 to 84. These are two very important periods in his musical coming out.
I think certently in the early phase of his career, he was more explicitly jazzy. Mm. And if you think about the people that he was working with, Ron Carter, for one, Hubert Laws, he was on Flying Dutchman. And there was quite a lot of improvisation, certainly in the groups that he had. And this long-running relationship with Brian Jackson, the pianist and flautist, that was really important as well. By the 80s, I think that he was becoming a more mainstream proposition. And the idea of him making potential hit singles, that I think was definitely on the cards for the record company. But the thing is that he was always floating between all of these different genres, which is part of the immense appeal for me. Hearing this album and hearing Is That Jazz, that was a revelation. But hearing Gun and other pieces on the record as well, Storm Music, which has this reggae flavor, he seemed to me to be this protean spirit, this guy who could do lots of different things, who'd be singing one minute and then doing spoken word the next, who would have a jazz sensibility in his music and then a soul or a funk sensibility. He'd do stuff which is more African. And I think that's really important if we look at jazz in the wider context of black music. It's not something that is completely truncated or separated from all these different genres. It has relationships. As we were saying before, it's had a long-running relationship with rhythm and blues. And I think what he's doing is actually taking that and pushing it into other directions as well and saying, OK, I'm interested in Bob Marley. I might be interested in Thomas Mapfumo. I'm interested in all kinds of music, mainstream soul music, Stevie Wonder, as well as John Coltrane and Billie Holiday. And that's the thing, is that he has this deep root in jazz, but it's not stopping him from embracing all of these other things as well.
Yet it seems to help him contextualize all of those influences.
Absolutely.
Intelligently.
Absolutely.
In quite a thought-provoking way.
So the next track that we're going to listen to, Morning Thoughts, to me, this is actually Gil Scott-Heron completely steeped in the spirit of John Coltrane, but also embracing the romanticism of Nat King Cole or Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass, but filtering it through his poetry. So he's not singing a romantic soul song, he's actually reciting spoken word. But if you listen to the atmosphere and the mood in this piece, it's very, very Namer-esque. It's very, you can tell that he's invoking that whole spirit of Coltrane, but he's tapping into his romanticism as well, and it makes for a really stunning combination, I think.
Let's have a listen to Morning Thoughts.
The sweet smell of my lady's love, her body blending with my own. The time when the world is dark and quiet and we're alone. The precipice that separates noise from peace. A hint of the ever-evolving magic. A precious place combines and still confirms the space of oneness and togetherness. There's a morning thought. And still a softer morning in March, a gift for me from God with a darling face and Papa's eyes and Grandma's grace. How there the light of immortality shines as wondrous fragile dream tastes light and the slightest breeze for the first time. Morning thoughts then evolve as smiles and love and sunshine and good morning. And morning thoughts of the storm, lightning flashing through the dawning sky, of grandma's hands and younger days of life, discovery from behind the veil of her guidance, of the music that forms our historical biography, describing the precious heritage of the aches and frustrations of city life blues, the threats of violence that provide the atmosphere, and observations from the balcony of a B-movie, as all the world's a stage. Reveals so much as midnight black.
black gives way to morning cracks and sunshine. We see morning as a new day and a new beginning, with all of its bright interpretive promise. Shine down then, sunshine, on Zimbabwe. Shine down on Nicaragua, Liberia, on Poland. Wherever a man would dare stand up for change. We were born at midnight in the darkest time, but surely the first minute of a new day brings new strength.
Morning Thoughts from Gil Scott-Heron's album Reflections. I'm Julian Joseph, and joining me is Kevin Legendre talking about the music of Gil Scott-Heron. Now, the recording at this time, it came out in 1982, but it was recorded earlier, wasn't it?
I think it was released in the States in 81, mm-hmm. and it came out in the UK in 82.
Took a little while for it to come through. Yeah. One of the things about Gil Scott-Heron is that I've found in many ways that everything about him was unconventional. Mm. He didn't really sound like a singer to my ear, in the way that, especially in the black community, when you're brought up on Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles or Aretha Franklin, he doesn't have this sort of virtuosity in his vocal tuning. But
he had a nice baritone. His tone was pretty rich, I think.
It's acceptable.
Yeah.
It's acceptable to my ear. I mean, with a real musician's ear. And I think a big influence. And I think he also sort of embraced something that was, in a sense, larger than one single element. It
Absolutely.
Was the sum of his parts.
Mm.
You know, he could sing, and I wouldn't necessarily call him a singer. And I don't think he would necessarily call himself a singer. Probably in the same way that Jimi Hendrix was like that. Jimi Hendrix never really dug his own singing. But the evidence is very different.
It's the kind of whole expressive nature.
Yeah.
So whether it's singing or whether it's poetry or whether it's writing music as well, because that's the other thing to remember, is that he did write and co-wrote songs. So he was a pianist as well, and he had a gift for melody. So I think you just sense, especially if you've seen him live, that there's this dynamo of expression, and it's going to come out in whatever way. If it means just engaging the audience for 5 or 10 minutes in a kind of improvised comedy skit, then it's going to be that. If it's going to be a seriously political poem, it will be that. If it's going to be a love song, it will be that too. So it's being open to all these different possibilities.
I think it's probably a little too harsh to say he's not this or he's not that. I think in every sense he's unconventional.
Mm.
He doesn't operate by conventions, and this is what makes him so interesting. I mean, his thinking especially is not conventional.
Absolutely not.
And it's not limited, which is what makes him so refreshing. I remember him talking about, if people can't decide what the music is, they would put it in the jazz section, because as far as most of the industry was concerned...
Like a default position, isn't it?
Yeah, he said it was the miscellaneous section,
mm.
the jazz section. That was how it was treated. So he had this great sense of protection and love for the whole genre and the ideology of jazz and its existence historically and its contemporaneousness. And yet he sort of flouted all the boundaries, all the barriers that were put up. They were all false barriers, and I guess this is what he's such a great example of.
I suppose you could call him one of the great examples of a Renaissance man.
Mm.
Says, I'll do everything. I mean, to a certain extent, I think that term has been overused a bit. Mm. It's like everybody seems to be a Renaissance man these days. But what I'd say is that he didn't just have many interests, he had many skills. He could do lots of different things. And the other thing to say as well is that he's a great literary figure, somebody who wrote novels, somebody who knew a lot about literature and poetry. And I think that just really comes through in his whole aesthetic as a musician as well. If you're interested in literature in a serious way, then you're interested in detail, storytelling, is about detail, about chapters, about moving the narrative on. And you sense that in some of these great songs. The precision with which the lyrics are written and the way that they change from one passage to the next. We heard it in Is That Jazz in particular, in the bridge, where he just makes that point about people overanalyzing. And it comes in at exactly the right moment, and it works really well with the change in harmony and instrumentation. It's that as well. It's just being really, really precise and knowing how to shift a narrative when need be.
So, overall, how would you sum up this album?
It's a record which makes a case for intertextuality and communication between different genres of black music. So having a panoramic view of all these great genres which make up black music, jazz, soul, funk, at times it goes into reggae, and then looking at poetry as something which can go across genres as well, which can work equally well in jazz as it can work in rhythm and blues. And you've had spoken word as a kind of common denominator between jazz and rhythm and blues for many, many years as well. And this stands completely in that lineage, but at the centre of it all is this incredible personality. That's essentially what he is. I mean, we can overanalyze Gil Scott-Heron until the cows come home in terms of what he was doing stylistically, but at the end of the day, it's just a very, very proud and very culturally aware human being saying, this is where I come from, this is the sum total, these are all the strands of my culture as an African-American. Jazz is available to me, rhythm and blues is available to me, soul is available to me, funk is available to me. And I'm interested in the diaspora as well, because there's some reggae on this record too. He's saying, why can't I embrace it all? And because he's got this just incredibly cohesive way of putting songs together and drawing all these things together, it works.
What's the last piece we're going
to hear? The last piece is Inner City Blues. So again, if we're talking about tapping into the deep history of soul and rhythm and blues, with a jazz connection as well, because Inner City Blues, which is featured on What's Going On, is probably Marvin Gaye's most jazz-inclined record, if you think about the sophistication of some of the writing and the arranging from David Van Der Peet. So he's taken Inner City Blues as a starting point, and then he's written his own poem as well, called The Siege of New Orleans, and it's just, I mean, the combination is a killer.
Well, thank you, Kevin Legendre,
thank
for
you.
Coming and speaking to us about Gil Scott-Heron and his seminal album, Reflections. This is Inner City Blues Makes Me Wanna Holler.
Absolutely.
Inflation means there ain't no chance, and to increase a little bit of finance, and bills they're gonna pile up the sky, and send that boy off to die. Yes, to make you wanna holler at home the way they do. Breaks
natural, the natural fact is a baby that I can't pay, but no taxes. Yes, it makes me wanna holler sometimes and throw up both my hands. It makes me wanna holler sometimes, throw up both my hands. So you say you never heard of the inner city blues, and what's more, you don't understand at all what the ghetto people mean when they say living behind walls. Well then put on your best suit, white shirt and tie, and run on downtown to stand in line for a job washing dishes that you may not qualify. Walk a big hole in a brand new pair of shoes and you've had your first look at the inner city blues. Go looking for a place to live, but all the while remember what lurks behind the devil's smile. Are we stupid or just naive that we continue to believe money can buy us anything, including a slice of the American dream? Yeah, answer ads in the paper about houses for sale and get treated like Charles Manson out on bail. When you start to get frustrated by the tactics they use, you'll recognize the feeling. It's the inner city blues. Yeah, make you want to holler sometimes and throw up both your hands. And haven't you ever wondered about why some brothers and sisters were down and out, receiving their sympathy from a bottle of wine, or worse yet, old homicide, living their lives in a glassine bag, or praising the mysteries of Terminal Skag? Some of our brothers parading in drag, another set of victims too whipped to choose. Yeah, you can recognize that, that's the inner city blues. Makes you wanna holler sometimes and throw up both your hands. To see sweet sisters, the blossoms of our African tree, profiling on the corner, talking about 10 and 3. Because in spite of all the money we made and taxes we paid, the woman was looking at hungry babes and some decisions had to be made. Could you tell her it's better to go to your grave as a slave at a minimum wage? Well, I hardly think so, but make you wanna holler sometimes and throw up both your hands. What happens when people start to feel they have nothing to lose, 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 nothing to lose? Did you ever hear about Mark Essex and the things that made him choose to fight the inner city blues? Yeah, Essex took to the rooftops guerrilla style and watched while all the crackers went wild. Brought in 600 troops, I hear, brand new to see them crushed with fear. Essex fought back with 1,000 rounds, and New Orleans was a changing town, and rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat was the only sound. Yeah, bring on the stone rifles to knock down walls, bring on the elephant guns, bring on the helicopters to block out the sun. Yeah, made the devil wanna holler, cause 8 was dead and 12 was down, and cries for freedom were a brand new sound. New York, Chicago, Frisco, L.A., justice was served and the unjust were afraid. Cause after all the years and all the fears, brothers were alive, the courage found, and spreading them goddamn blues around. Yeah, make you wanna holler, black people, and hold up both your hands and say liberation.
Crime is increasing and trigger happy policing. Panic is spreading. Make you wanna holler sometimes and throw up both of your hands. Make you wanna holler sometimes and throw up in both your hands. Throw up both your hands.
Gil Scott-Heron, who passed away recently. And thank you to Kevin Legendre for reminding us of Gil's major contribution with the album Reflections. If any of you out there are moved by what you heard and wish to make a comment or suggestion for future Now's the Times, please contact us at jazzlineup@bbc.co.uk. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on DAB Digital Radio. Our second concert set from the launch of this year's Glasgow Jazz Festival features the vocals and piano talents of Ian Shaw and was recorded at BBC's Pacific Quay building on the banks of the River Clyde in Glasgow on the 13th of May 2011. Ian Shaw sings and is at the piano and begins with Since I Fell For You.
When you just give love and you never get love, you better get love and let love depart. I
I know it's so, so, and yet I know I can't get you out of my heart. You made me leave my happy home. Give me good love and now you're gone. Since I fell for you, your love brings me such misery and pain. Guess I'll never ever feel this way again. Since I fell for you, so bad, it's real sad. I fell in love with you. You hurt me, then you desert me. What can I do? I'm still in love with you. I guess I'll never see the light. I get the blues every night. Since I fell for you, hurt me, then you desert me. I fell in love with you. Ooh, it's so bad, it's really, really sad. What can I do? I'm still in love with you. I guess I'll never see the light. I get the blues every night. Since I fell for you, I fell for you.
Thank you very much. Was from an album that I recorded last year. I did three albums in a row. The first album was about kind of wanting to be in love with somebody and not sure whether it would happen. The second album was being in the middle of being in love with someone and thinking this isn't going to last. And the last album, which is called The Abbey Road Sessions, funnily enough, because we recorded it at Abbey Road down in London, was all about breaking up. Oh, happy day, oh, happy day. So some of these songs are from that album, written by, that was a buddy, great Buddy Johnson song. He wrote Save Your Love, which appeared on that seminal album with Cannonball Adderley and Nancy Wilson. And he wrote that song, Since I Fell For You. and this is written by Cole Porter. This was written in 1938, and it was from a musical called Leave It to Me. Terrible, terrible names, these musicals. They didn't run, but the songs were great. Get out of town before it's too late, my love. Get out of town, be good to me, please. Why wish me harm? Why not retire to a farm and be content to charm the buds from the trees? Just disappear, I care for you much too much. When you're near, you hold me dear, we touch too much. Thrill when we meet is too bittersweet, but darling, it's getting me down. On your marks, get set, get out of town. Get out of town before it's too late, my love. Get out of town, be good to me, please. Why wish me harm? Why not retire to a farm and be content to charm the birds from the trees? Just disappear, I care for you much too much. When you're near, holding me dear, we touch too much. It's too bittersweet, darling, it's getting me down. Oh, on your marks, get set, get out of just disappear. I care for you much too much. When you're near, you're holding me dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is too bittersweet, darling, it's getting me down. So on your marks, get set. 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 Get out of town, get out. Get out of town.
The entertaining and expressive sound of Ian Shaw and Get Out of Town, recorded at the launch of this year's Glasgow Jazz Festival on May 13th at BBC Scotland's Pacific Quay building. That's nearly it from Jazz Lineup this week. Next week, we have highlights of a concert set from the BBC Big Band featuring my broadcasting colleague on the show and vocalist Claire Martin. And I'd just like to take this opportunity to congratulate Claire on receiving the OBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours List. A great achievement. That will be recorded as part of the Light Fantastic Festival at London's South Bank Centre. There's plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Jazz on 3 on Monday nights at 11. This week, Jez Nelson presents a specially recorded session for Jazz on 3 featuring UK-born Barbados-raised saxophonist Shabaka Hutchings and his new groove-based quartet featuring drummers Seb Rocheford and Tom Skinner alongside tuba player Oren Marshall. We end today's show with trumpeter Matthew Halsall, who also plays the Glasgow Jazz Festival this month. His latest album is out on the Gondwana label and is called On the Go. It features the trumpeter in his regular quintet with their fairly transcendental use of repetition in the rhythm section as a basis for the simple and direct musings of both Halsall and Nat Burchell on the saxophone. Adam Fairhall is on the piano, Gavin Barras is on bass, and Gaz Hughes on the drums. This is The Journey Home. Until next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
I'm John Shea, and this is BBC Radio 3 with Music Through the Night, starting today at the 2010 BBC Proms. The Minnesota Orchestra and their conductor Osmo Vanska gave the traditional Proms performance of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, and before it, Gil Shaham joins them to play Berg's Violin Concerto. Berg wrote it as an elegy for Manon Gropius, dedicating it to the memory of an angel. She was the daughter of the architect Walter Gropius and Alma Mahler, Gustav Mahler's widow, and she died from polio aged only 18. The two parts of the concerto move from depicting Manon's gentleness and her grace and charm, represented by a Viennese waltz, through feelings of horror to a mood of acceptance and tranquility. Thank you.
Thank you.